But you are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Yo.
And it's me, Brian. This week we are talking about anime from the week Monday the 15th to Sunday the 21st, with the single exception of Bono Bono, which is probably from about 13 weeks before. And then we put down these screws, otherwise you'll be hearing tinkling noises in the microphone.
Bono Bono is ever relevant, no matter when it airs or
yeah, pretty much
it is. So. Yes, yeah, we'll get. There's a line which was very good this week.
Mm.
But first, we start off with the Monday show of The Laughing Salesman, Episode 7, The Man Who Transformed, and Rule of Mummy Friends.
Okay, so that, I assume that's a Japanese term, right? Mummy Friends?
I'm guessing it's a term which has been translated into the phrase mummy friends, yes.
Because I've never heard that phrase in English. I understand what it means,
yes.
But I've never heard it, yeah.
This was a game of two halves. First half, very good. Second half, the worst story they've done so far.
Yeah, I gotta say, generally I'm on the second end of it, but yeah, this one, the first part, I think was better.
Yeah. The first one is about a guy who's got a perfect marriage, but he doesn't live a very adventurous life.
No, the best part is freaking, he just happens to be walking down the road and he sees this guy saying goodbye to his wife and child, and it's like, oh, I imagine he's seen this scene play out a million times, and how boring his life must be. Let me interfere with it. Piece of shit. Like, it's, at worst, right, he liked reading the gossip magazines. I mean, yes. Like, it's a guilty pleasure. It's not great, but it's not the worst thing. Other than that, he seemed pretty happy. But no. Laughing salesman inserts himself in and ruins his life. So and the lives around him.
He gives him a wig.
And a mustache. And a pair of sunglasses.
A pair of sunglasses.
I think that tracksuit probably as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he must have got the tracksuit for him as well. So yeah, so he can reinvent himself as this rough and ready adventurous guy who goes out of the town at night and gets into trouble.
Yeah, he has a word. It's like he keeps saying adventure or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's like the French word.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but then he keeps on egging him on to the point where he goes, oh, I've even got you, but the punchline is, I've even got you a separate apartment so you can carry on living this life.
Mm. Because the guy's getting really into it. Like, he's mocking people on the street that would be people. It's like, that's a guy who looked like me. He keeps saying his name, even though I forget his name.
Yeah.
That's a guy who looked like me, so I'll go like, bleh, act all drunk in his face. Nothing he can do about it.
But it turns out this apartment has another wife and even more children.
Yeah, because of his rough and ready lifestyle.
Yes.
And he's kind of like, he's like, I must have the wrong apartment. She's like, what the hell are you talking about?
You've been here for 17 years.
Yes. It brings into the question, how has Mokuru ruined the life of the guy that he's given who looks like the disguise?
Yeah.
Maybe he improved his life.
I think I do like about the second episode, we learned that he, by proxy, in ruining one person's life, he's ruining many people's lives that we don't see off screen.
Yes.
But yeah, so something along those lines. I've taken your family away from you. Now you have nothing. Something like that, maybe. I don't know.
That'll teach you to.
And him walking back up the road with a crying wife and child is like, I hope daddy comes back soon. And I was just, and he's like, well, I've improved everything. My work here is done.
He certainly learned his lesson about living a fulfilling lifestyle.
He might come back someday if he feels like it. Ho, 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 ho. Oh, God, what a bastard.
I know, but I mean, the more I watch it, I want him to ruin people's lives now. That's the bad thing.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's probably what the show's intending, because when he came in the second episode, he's entertaining the children, and I was like, no, children, run far away. And when the mother, like one of the mothers who's supposed to be overbearing is like, hey, it's some kind of freaking creepo, I'm calling the cops on you. I was like, yeah, do. That's like the best thing you can do right now.
No, because then he'd be in the back of the squad car and it's like, ah, so dualized kind of restaurant? Yeah, yeah, I know. We're on dual road town. My wife's always at me to, oh, is there a problem? Well, I happen to run a business that can help you out there. Let's figure us out of prison.
Mm. It's odd that the salary man part of the episode is my favorite part, but there was a few bits in the second I liked.
Yeah, I think the problem was the visuals in the second. It was a big step down.
Yeah.
I think the first half is storyboarded by a guy who did a lot of Space Patrol Luluco.
Oh, okay.
I didn't look who did this one, but this one definitely, the character designs didn't look so much.
I thought the animation was a little choppier.
Yeah.
I didn't have the wonderful paintings that you were researching in the first part.
The mom who's always complaining looks like she's drawn as a caricature of somebody, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be someone specific.
Yeah. But yeah, the gist of it is that there's these bunch of mums, but one mum is always complaining and ruining the life of this other mum, so she just wants...
She's the alpha one who gets away and...
For a quiet life, she asks Mogaru to, like, just make sure everything she wants happens so she stops moaning.
Like, you could have asked him to, like, you know, take her out of the picture, make sure she's not as influential, that kind of thing. But it's like, no, I want to make the bully who makes my life bad, I want to make her life better.
Yes.
The fuck were you thinking? You asked the devil for one thing, and that's what you asked for? Jeez.
And then, so yeah, it goes so well with her happy for one day that she wants her to be happy all the time, and Roger is like, well...
Be careful what you wish for.
If you insist.
Yeah.
And yeah. Turns out the one thing which would make her happy is if this woman moved out the apartment block because her son's always running in the hallways.
Yeah. So her life is ruined, even though like she was afraid she was going to get kicked out by standing up to her anyway. So
yeah, you almost think that maybe her life will be better off once she moves out of the apartment.
I think she'll be better off because that woman is a lunatic and she's always, and literally now she's going to get her way from now on, which suits Mogaru to no end because he likes making people miserable.
Yes.
I did like the shots of him, like, is like, well, how did you convince the school board to change where the school trip is, and how did you convince them thing? And just like a quick shot succession of him going like, boom, boom, just wrecking people.
Yeah, it kind of cuts to like a manga style of him doing his dons at people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like he doesn't even have to explain exactly what he did. It's just him going at somebody and going, don is enough to ruin somebody's day.
Yeah, it's just in trying to ruin this one woman's life, he's actually ruining a lot of people's lives.
I wonder how his accent is. Like, Mogaru, who's your favorite turtle? It's like, oh, of course, Donatello. Oh, wait, no!
dear.
But that's Laughing Salesman for this week, yeah.
Mm.
Next up, we've got Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Gomachan, Pepepe Sans, Close Call. This was very strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Gamma has accidentally been posted to the building,
the office.
Ashiba's grandfather.
Yeah.
And so she decides to take his personal elevator up.
Yeah.
But it's like this crazy fucking Willy Wonka elevator with like a control panel shaped like Ashiba's face. Well, I mean, like, it has the outline of it, just random buttons everywhere.
Control panels.
Yeah. Just like a lot of different things. And she can't get out of the elevator because she can't figure out which button opens it or makes it go up or whatever.
And meanwhile, the president is outside the office tending to his iguana farm.
How many kinds of animal farms does he have? Because he's had a dog farm. I feel like he's had another one as well.
I think he probably just has one at a time. And then they probably all get out of control like the one did this week.
New farm. I just assume he has multiple businesses, like when he bought all those businesses trying to get Gamachan back before. Yes. It's like, well, I bought this iguana farm, so now I got to use it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And so the iguanas get into the office, so Pepepe is like, what on earth is going on outside?
Because you just hear screaming and presumably iguana noises. Yeah. She gets on the what do you call those? The cup phones, cup phones,
like tin can and cup and string phone. Yes, they got,
which has terrible reception.
No, because they don't know how to fucking use it. Because they're going like, hello, I can't hear anything because you gotta wait a few seconds and then hold up to you for them to respond, and then they're doing phone, hello, I can't get it. This crazy phone is not working at all.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll go to a place where we're kids who know how to use them. Like, laughing at these adults.
Stupid parents.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Then finally, the president comes in, uses his lift, and it turns out none of these buttons open the door because he'd replaced the button which opens the door with voice recognition.
Because it was too inconvenient to figure out which button.
Yeah.
And it, they say open sesame, but I feel like he's making some pun with, like...
Gomma in it. Somewhere. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Dear.
I think that's pretty much the end.
Pretty much.
They kind of sort out why Gomma had been sent there in the first place. Oh, and then we go to the other country, and there's still tiny yetis everywhere.
Including in the bathroom when you're on the John. Yeah. The hellish nightmare that is Sagao Gun's life.
Yep. Oh, but they're so cute, aren't they?
Dear. Yeah, that's pretty much the episode, like trapped in a lift.
Yeah.
I guess kind of a bottle episode, but it's so fucking weird. It works pretty well.
Yeah, there's other things like we get the company song.
Yeah, she has to start singing karaoke in the elevator.
Which she instinctively does and then realizes partway through, what on earth am I doing? Especially finding the door.
Dear.
Next up, Makaruna, Akuno Gundan, Episode 7, We Can Never Go Home.
Dark.
No.
In which we get the payoff of all the things they did last episode. Mm. Means they can't afford the rent of anywhere. So they're gonna have to find a part-time job and live in the loft of...
The shed of the little kids.
Loafer kid. Yeah. Disciple kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of the Loafer Disciple kid's dad's estate agency.
Yes.
Good lord, that's more complicated than it should be for such a short episode.
So they're going to go and get a part-time job at a sushi restaurant because there's employee meals supplied.
Hmm.
Which is the best joke is they just burst straight in and say, we want to have employee meals.
Yeah. Yeah. Still good.
Yeah. I really like the character animation on the, particularly on the two dog men.
Mm.
Because even though they look the same, you kind of get the personality both from the voice and also sort of their body language and how they behave.
Yeah. I think the serious one is kind of more the straight man reacting to the...
Yes.
The randomness, all right.
Yeah. And of course, they have the estate agent dad just fucking with them. Oh, you need a place to live? Here, how about this? No, you can't live there. You can't afford this. So don't worry, guys.
In this market? No, no.
But yeah, that's pretty much. It's a very short show, so there's not much to say about it.
But this is good. And it's very, very sweet. I think what I said the one last week was very, very nice, too.
The sentimental kind of thing of it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, because it was like they were kind of going to the burned down flying saucer. And like, I think Donna's going to like turn his face full of tears for one day. No, he turns back. He's putting on a brave face for the two little guys. He's got to hold strong for all of them. He's like, oh, yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, weirdly emotional for a burned down spaceship scene.
We still don't know who set it on fire. A pseudo payoff on that robot who emerged from a bush four episodes ago.
Arsonist robot unleashed upon the earth.
Mm.
I still haven't looked to see whether it's the manga artist doing the end of episode. What's going to happen to these guys bit where she's wishing them good luck?
Yeah, don't lose evil core.
I assume it must be her doing it.
Hmm.
Okay, on to Pre Chi-chan, episode 6, Bumblers. Gotta do lots to pay Yuka. This is a weird episode where it had a different title in the episode to what Crunchyroll had called it above the episode.
Yeah, I think it was just useless in the Bumblers.
And no punctuation either.
Yeah.
This is an episode which relied on lots of Japanese puns.
Yeah.
Which, thankfully, because this is aimed at tiny children... They explained, but did not really make it any funnier.
Yeah,
So we kind of learned that Joe-kun seems to be coming back, not so much to see Chi-chan, but to see Yuka.
Yeah.
And so they decide he's got a what's it, the magazine he's got? It's like an Underground Dwellers magazine. He's got
it's a special edition guide to pleasing, that sounds weird, making happy small girls or something?
Surface girls.
Surface girls, that was it, yeah.
It's what surface girls like, apparently.
Yeah.
So they decide to go to school and give Yuka things which will make her happy to repay the debt they owe her. But because they're bumblers, they end up making pun things which are a pun on the thing they were trying to make.
Yeah.
So rib meat.
They make rib meat instead of flowers.
Yeah, a giant chestnut.
Yeah, I've forgotten exactly.
It was
the
instead
point
of
there.
A surprise, I think.
Right. Okay.
And then, what's the last one? Is it happiness and panties? I can't remember exactly. They don't. That was the pun they didn't explain.
Yeah, and most of this is interrupting her. Or she was having a mock exam. Or
yeah,
something.
She was doing like a mock high school entrance exam, which was finding difficult because these idiots kept on dropping things on their head.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was cute. I think that's the best you could say about it. It may have been funnier if you knew Japanese and could see the puns before they explained them to you.
Yeah, I've kind of dropped it off in my viewing the last while now.
Yeah, no, I understand, man.
This was pretty good.
The only reason I'm kind of still watching it is I'm not enjoying it, but I'm not finding it offensive. Like, it hasn't done any fart or poop jokes, and I don't think it will, based off the look of it. I'm not interested, dude.
I was finding it at the longest 10 minutes of the week. You know, I feel like...
I know!
I feel like I get through My Hero Academia faster than this.
Sure.
And its sister show, or brother show, is 100% Pascal, where we had three stories.
Mm.
We had Also Known as May Sickness... Perfect Plate, of course, and Pascal English straight out of America.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so Pascal and Steve have succumbed to May sickness.
Which they've, I think is a different thing than what has happened then,
yes.
Seems to be the joke. Is that a thing, May sickness?
I think it is. They're kind of like saying, oh, you fall ill in May because the stress of the years.
Yeah, at the start of the year, yeah.
Crushed you.
Mm.
But yes, in this, Pascal has turned into some sort of D&D slime.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Steve has as well.
He's also succumbed to the May sickness, as the principal sadly says. And it's like, that's not May sickness. That's something else. Also, he keeps leaking acid everywhere.
He does, yes.
Hmm.
Then they try and cheer them up to make them. Bring them out of it. They end up merged into one giant slime. The principal's clothes get destroyed.
Yeah, there are a few plans. Like on the principal's thing, is they put Pascal and Steve into a bucket on the back of your one's motorbike.
Yeah,
to get them all riled up. And the principal also decides to race them in his hot rod.
Yeah,
and like he nearly gets in a traffic accident, but he comes out of it. But all his clothes fall off, as happens to him every episode. It seems.
Yeah, even his underpants this time as well. I can't remember what was covering his modesty.
I think someone had fallen over and their foot was in the air.
I think you're right, yes.
Yeah. Fallen over in shock, obviously.
I can't remember what happened at the end to get them all out of it. Oh, I don't know. Steve turned into like a Toriyama gorilla.
He looked like a Dragon Ball fucking ape thing. Initially he just looked like a monkey, but his snout kept getting longer and longer as the episode went on. And I was like, I don't know what that's about. Because they were trying to cook for Pascal, like...
Oh, that was it. Oh, yes, it was like, oh, yes, I'm a good cook. You know, I'm a terrible cook.
Yeah, and was it the...
That made him bubbly.
Potato starch.
Yes, that made... Oh, it was potato starch fixed him, yes. Because first of all, he got bubbly and started shooting acid out everywhere.
Yeah. And then potato starch managed to get him non-gelatinous again. And they tried it on Steve, but it's just a gorilla covered in flour now.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's most of it.
I think that's most of it, yeah. I'm sure it was even stranger than how we're describing it.
Yeah, it sounds like a fucking a dream, but that's basically kind of the show, so.
And Perfect Plate was one of the Pascals went to a convenience store, parked his tricycle Pascal outside.
Yeah.
And then the policeman Pascal came along and said, "Oh,
was that, I thought that was just a regular traffic cop.
Oh, it was a regular policeman, yes. It wasn't a Pascal. I was just assuming everyone was Pascal at this point.
No, it's weird. In Perfect Plate, most of the time, the Pascals appear to be like the straight men of it, and everything else around them is weird.
Yes. So, yeah, he's going to...
I think that's how it works.
Yeah, he's going to arrest the hero Pascal for these various infringements.
Illegal parking, I don't like your face, yes. All this kind of shit.
And then the tricycle Pascal wanders off on its own. So you need
to become the main character.
To become the main character. And then more puns in Pascal English straight out of America.
I think that it was better explained as a pun.
It was, and it was kind of like, hello, children, here's how you can sneakily be rude to somebody pretending that you're saying something in English.
Saying something innocuous. What was the phrase again?
I can't remember now.
Because he was talking, I was like, is this supposed to be, the guy was DiCaprio or something?
Yes.
Because that's the only English-speaking person they could think of, I guess?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's a specific talent-type guy.
Right.
Or a parody of somebody.
Because they did have the hat with the thing.
But yeah, the guy certainly was a real-life English speaker playing that character.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what the pun was, though. It was,
yeah, I should have wrote that down.
It's been like 4 days since I watched it. I do remember enjoying it, though. I will say that.
Yeah.
But as has been noted, they've started repeating the end songs now. So.
Yeah, they're kind of looping back into the same poses and whatnot.
And the same, yeah. But yeah, where as you say, pre-Chan is not packed with jokes. This is...
jam-packed.
Yes, but still not as good as last week's. Last week's is the episode, if I was going to recommend 100% Pascal 20.
If you want to get someone into it, sure.
Yeah. Episode 5 is the one, I think.
Mm.
How about you, Niall?
About what now? Sorry.
How do you feel about 100% Pascal?
Well, I didn't get around to this week, is he? So... well, the thing is, though, I didn't feel like I've... missed out a ton of a lot. Like, things you were saying there, I didn't mean it's just a stream of nonsense. It sounded like very entertaining nonsense, but at the same time, it's kind of up and down for me with this, really.
You see, I think the past 2 episodes have been particular. The past 3 as well, because I like the one with the where they introduced the delinquent.
I like that one.
Mm.
You watch the pop quiz one?
I did. No, I did not.
Okay, well, you see, you missed last week's. Last week's is the best episode they've done so far. It is the densest it is with jokes, and it is just one joke escalated repeatedly.
Yeah, for the whole episode, yeah.
Well, but it's only downhill from there then, so if I watch that one, I'll never reach those heights again.
Okay, on to Bono, episode 45. What's a hobby?
I think they get it defined pretty good.
They do, yes.
Mm.
Though I like Chipmunk's hobby of collecting 10 unique-looking leaves, then taking them to the edge of a cliff and throwing them off. Because it gives you a very distinct sense of loss.
I think Chipmunk bullies himself sometimes. And this is one of those cases, yeah.
Well, I think maybe because it gets bullied so often.
That could be it as well.
Mentally toughening himself up for the inevitable bullying he will receive at some point in the near future.
Or maybe it's because his sisters are always giving out to him for gathering so much shite in his house. It's like, well, if I throw it out as soon as I hit an arbitrary number, that's perfect.
You've become self-reliant because this way you won't get too attached to like things and objects. He's trying to, again, train himself up to be a much more independent chipmunk.
Except for that walnut. what's Fenny's thing is just magic tricks.
It's magic, yeah.
Like I think I keep wanting to say she. I think he kept just throwing that rock away because never brought it back.
Like he goes, hey guys, check it out. Whoop, gone. And Bono's me, Fenny, you lost your rock there.
Good stuff. Because Bono's thing is, what is it? He likes tapping his seashell and then eating it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or shellfish, I should say.
But they explain, you know, that's just a thing that you do before you eat. No, but if you just tap a shell, that'd be obvious. You need to go like tap, 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 double tap, 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 slide, and then eventually you get some good people come around, and then that'd be a habit.
Yeah, because it's a music thing. So, like, Chipmunk's first definition, which I think is pretty good, is if it's not practical. So because tapping the shell is related to eating, which is a practical thing, it's not a hobby.
Yes, because then because Fenny says, oh, because it lists a bunch of things. It's like collecting, watching. I can't remember what the third thing was.
Collection, watching, and doing or something?
I can't remember exactly. But yeah, Fenny says, oh, when I watch the sunset, is that a hobby? And they go, yes. But then Fenny says, oh, but it helps
me sleep. Well,
yeah. it almost becomes not a hobby.
That's a sleep aid.
Yes.
Yeah, that's different. That's useful.
And then go see a raccoon, and
he has lots of hobbies.
He has, yes. But then basically comes to the conclusion that hobbies is what adults call playing.
Yes.
Because they don't want to admit they're playing.
And Chipmunk can think of an example of an adult who doesn't play, which is his dad.
Yes.
Have we seen his dad before?
Yes, we have, yeah.
I was wondering, have we seen his dad, like, have we met him besides in shots where it shows all their parents?
Yeah, he's behind his
whole episode about him.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can see where his sisters get their behavior from.
Okay. Oh, I remember how serious he is now, yeah. But his dad wasn't. His dad, what is it? Sleeps, eats, gathers up nuts, disappears, or isn't there. Those are the only things he does. And then he's swinging from a tree, and there's like, look, he's playing now. It's like, no, that's exercise.
He seems to enjoy it, though. Tough one. Tough one.
I did like Raccoon's thing of basically like bullying people without even being there and just listening and smiling away to himself. That was pretty great.
Like, I feel like, you know, they ring a lot of good material of just the kind of thing. You imagine a fiver going up to everyone saying,
yeah.
Like, oh, what is this thing the way this thing is? And then, here. I got the program for you. Just watch this from beginning to end. It'll answer any questions you may have about the world around you.
Hmm.
Then in Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 33, a certain shinobi hater and a super great swordsman. I've closed the links which had their names in. I didn't write them down.
Let's see.
So it's one of the guys. Sorry, go on.
Let me go to my history, see if it comes up. So first of all, we meet Takigawa Kazumasu. Yeah, that's who we meet first.
Who is the guy with the red bandana?
Yeah, he's the guy who doesn't like shinobi and comes out in hives.
Just the sheer mention of them. Yeah. Yes. Sometimes when he mentions it himself.
And then the second guy who apparently...
he keeps trying to introduce himself, but he murders everyone around him before he can.
Yes, is Kitabata K. Tominori and his son.
Mm.
So it's like, how do they say, 20,000 of Nobunaga's troops versus 8,000 of his or something?
Something like that. There's definitely like a 10,000 advantage, yeah.
So they just need this guy.
He's given up his lordship to his son so he can go out and slice people's heads off, of which he does a lot this episode.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
They make the plan for attacking this fortress on top of a hill.
Yeah.
And we got, I guess, like the ninja-hating swordsman and the cute ninja girl to team up together to try and save the game, crack the case.
Mm.
And then, I like to disguise at the end, pretending to be his bodyguard.
I'm the mysterious bodyguard. He just breaks out in more hives. He's like, yes, I know this is a shinobi dirty trick. Good stuff.
Might get a cool fight next week because it seems to be showing the sword master and Chittery.
I think the episode's called like the monster and the demon, or versus the demon, or something like that. Yeah.
There's a great shot where three guys get their heads off, cut off in the same shot.
They're all very surprised.
Yes.
They didn't expect the level of violence in this show, but come on, guy, watch the intro.
Yep. Chopped up.
Yeah.
Next up, onto the full-length things, My Hero Academia, episode 21, Battle On Challengers, in which some fights, which only take a couple of panels, if that, in the comic, get extended a bit.
I think they get extended a bit nicely. It's kind of good to give... I'm glad they gave the acid girl and the belly button guy a little more.
Yeah, that's the one, and also the shadow guy and
yes.
the pulling stuff out of her girl. Yeah,
Yeah,
I'm not sure you. I'm not entirely sure you see that at all in the comic.
Yeah, I don't recall. I like because I couldn't remember a lot of how it went. The only one I remembered how it went down was Todoroki, Tetsu and Kirishima.
Yes.
I remembered how that went because of the whole thing. I was like, they even have the same like fighting pose on their title cards and shit. Fucking beautiful.
Also learned to have the same birthday as well.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Yeah, because I think in the comic later on, there's the gag of somebody joining the defeated off-panel club.
Hmm.
I thought that one was... Momo is the one who can create objects, and Shadow Kid is fucking Fumikage.
I believe let me get the cheat sheet open.
So I thought that was like that would have probably been one of the ones that got a bit more coverage in the comic, and so because it seemed like because all of Momo's like introductions in for any kind of events to that and all of everything's kind of known by one. Here's the one who got into the school on recommendations because she's just so good at being superhero. But
there seems to be no limitation on her power. It's just she kind of panics because she needs to think of what to make.
I think
they just explain it that he beat her because his power is instantaneous and it takes a while for her to pull something out of her body.
And she also has to plan what it is because she has to basically, I assume like it's something like think of the chemical components of the things she has to make. So she only thinks of a shield. Fuck it. Shield again. She doesn't get a chance to think. Like he just uses his power as it is, but she has to think every time she uses her power.
Yeah.
That kind of way.
It's just kind of tied in quite well to how like you have these kids who kind of know they got into schools or recommended or they're like a dead cert to be top of the class. But like, same that happened with Bakugo. He went into school thinking he's going to be the top dog of the whole academy, but then he was completely shown up that being, you're kind of maybe near the top, but you're kind of maybe close to the middle of the pack, really, in terms of people who know how to implement their abilities properly.
I'm guessing we're kind of going to see that growth in a lot of them as well.
Yeah, and Momo's kind of taking a knock here because she was seeing, like, you know, yeah, she's great on paper, maybe as part of a team, but, you know, when it comes down to events like this, she's got a lot to kind of learn through experience of a lot.
Ran Shadow Power is good from the get-go because it pretty much reacts on its own and on his command.
Yeah.
Whereas her one, she needs experience under her belt.
Yeah. Yeah. And similarly, like, you know, obviously Deku is kind of being a guy who's been in the background, who's coming to the fore very much in his event, but also like something like Fumikage, who literally hangs around the shadows, is also proving his worth on the field in two events in a row.
Whereas Mei Hatsume just turns her fight into an advert.
That was fucking amazing. I'd forgotten that's how that went down. Because I thought it was like, wait, she convinced him to wear this backpack, this self-balancing backpack. And I was like, is this her screwing him over? It's like, no, this is testing my new product, self-balancing backpack. You can't possibly fall down with this. And everyone's just like, whoa, she's really good at pitches. she has a speakers attached to herself, so the marketing guys in the back can hear.
Yes, we learn her quirk is the ability to see up to 5 kilometers away.
Yeah.
So basically, she just uses it to find where the people from the support companies are
and put the show on for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
For dragging it out for 10 minutes, and then
I think it skips ahead like 10 minutes later, and she just walks out. It's like, woo! I got to do my whole pitch. I'm done.
And so Aida is another person who is really mad at her now.
I noticed that Ochaka did leave at that stage. Is that because she's jealous or because because of her fight?
Yes. She left her separate. She's probably getting nervous about her fight coming up. Yeah,
because she saw how the other fight was going down.
But yeah, there is also the thing, of course, is how Midoriya thinks like Hatsume to a point of figuring out how other people's powers work.
Yeah, he's doing the kind of I guess like the Batman thing of figuring out how people's powers work, how these people would be in a matchup, because he's mumbling to himself. Yes, everyone's getting really worried.
The noise is a scribble noise. It's mumbling, isn't it? Yeah. mumble, scribble.
Yeah, I did like his kind of thing where he's going through the fighting stats of the sparkly belly button guy, and it's like, her power's really good, but she needs to get up close to him. But they kind of have he stupidly has revealed his weakness to her way back in the episodes in the prior season, if you remember. And she's just like, yeah, I know fucking how to get past this, dude. And also, she's like way fitter than him. So,
yeah, she's fucking like, you know, no like fancy like strategy. She just kind of gets him close and clocks him.
Dodge, dodge, dodge till he gets a tummy ache and then beat the shit out of him.
Well, she also acids his belt as well. So,
oh, she does. So once she gets close enough, she does acid his belt.
That's why the time match says, "Oh, what if only they had the opposite each other's powers?"
Because he wanted them to be in that. He doesn't mention it by name, but that fighting game where the women's clothes fall off. Yeah. And everyone's just calling him a motherfucker the whole time.
I think he's like, well, avoid this for fucking Ikitosin or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he gets jabbed in the head by Kyoka's earlobes.
What an odd sentence. Oh, dear.
Yeah, so the pair of them knock each other out, so they've got to settle it in an arm wrestling contest later.
Or something like that. Then Ochako's kind of like, you know, just getting rubber up, and it's like, Dick comes in for saying, well, if you're nervous, I got this whole thing worked out for saying,
I figured out how your powers work against Bakugo. Here's a strategy that could work for you.
And he's like, no, dude, what's the fun theme in this whole arc? Because people are trying to like, fun, figure out their own way and stand out on their own. So I got to do my own thing as well. I'm nervous as fuck, but I got to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's a really cool kind of hero moment for her where she's like, I got to do this on my own terms. I can't just be leaning on you the whole time, because that's kind of what I've been doing.
But at the same time, the important thing for later on is that Midoriya offered that in the first place, regardless of whether she'd asked for help or not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like she wasn't leaning on him there. He's just trying to help her out. But she kind of felt like she was leaning on his abilities in the chariot, not the chariot race, the
cavalry
battle. Yeah.
Yeah, I did like the bit where he says, oh, I figured out how to beat you all, even you.
she's like, I'm not sure if it's insulting or kind of like scared. It's some weird combination of that. Oh, dear.
Kind of like, I guess you're kind of cooling down with it, but I guess it's probably like maybe gearing up for probably much more spectacular battle in the next episode, because like, you know, doing a little bit of like especially in that Mina versus what's his name, Billy Button Dandy guy. But it's because she's kind of skating around using kind of the
acid as like
lubricant, the lightly corrosive acid on the ground to skate around. We just kind of just pan the background around her to kind of simulate the movements. They're doing a lot of that.
But I still appreciate that a lot of these guys got a little more in the fights. I figured they were going to go right to the right before the Ochako and Bakugo.
Fight. In the comic, you don't see many of the fights in this tournament.
Yeah, you kind of see like the main characters' things.
Yeah, because it kind of fixes its perspective onto certain characters and say when they're not in the room.
Yeah, like in this
off screen.
Exactly, like when Midoriya kind of goes back and he figures, oh, the fight will probably be over pretty quick between those two guys because all the other fights have been very fast. A lot of that is like when it's focusing on Midoriya, we kind of don't see what's happening on the stage, that kind of thing. And this episode takes the time to show us that. Actually, I really liked that's the one we haven't mentioned yet, the electric guy and the one with Vines. Yeah, the one with Vines for her, like, is she like a Jesus thing? Because... It's like when the announcer calls her, it's like, yeah, the Vine Killer. And she's like, actually, please, Mr. Announcer, I wouldn't like to be called that. I'm much more pure and everything. He's like, I'm really sorry. And her power is kind of terrifying as well. I'm beginning to think that Electric Guy is dumb anyway, whether he discharges his powers or not.
He's like, hey, baby, after I beat you, want to go out and have something to eat? Like, no. I'm kind of hoping you get your fucking butt kicked now, buddy.
Yeah, he's only one notch higher than Minoru in terms of being a little creep. So
yeah, well, he is shown with him doing that. So, yeah. I think it's just he's capable of talking more before he discharges his electricity. Oh, dear.
I think there's lots of good stuff in this from Present Mike as well. Leaning heavy into favoritism.
I think he calls out Ochako. Is like, I hope she'll win.
Yes.
good stuff.
But yeah, it's a lot of comedy because it's, as I say, they're fleshing out stuff which was played for comedy in the comic because you didn't really see it at all. But yeah, I think from now on we kind of get more thematic stuff. But yeah, we'll be interested in seeing whether they flesh out the other fights which happen off panel.
Oh, yeah, I hope they, like this episode, they kind of take the time. This is the one time where they've lengthened the how long it took in the manga versus how long they're doing it in the anime. But I feel like this was kind of deserved, or it works quite well.
Right, next on the list is Tiger Mask Double, episode 32, Lumberjack.
Confusing, I know. All we make clear.
Yes.
Because I didn't know the term, lumberjack.
Did you not?
No, I don't know my wrestling terms.
So, yes, it ends with a lumberjack match. Basically, Tiger Mask has got this... It's his last fight on his contract, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's going to go up against Miracle 3, who we learn is the trainer from Tiger's Den.
We should have got it. He has the beard.
That's true. But this will be
you don't see him too often.
I guess, yeah, you didn't think of him.
I thought about Tiger could have been Boss Man, but now I remember, I think Boss Man may have been killed in the underground wrestling arena.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's Arn Anderson, in that they establish, like, he isn't a flashy wrestler, but his fundamentals are totally sound. He's, like, the best at doing the fundamentals of professional wrestling.
Well, that, and he's kind of, he says as much that he knows all Tiger's moves. And since he's a trainer, it's just like, I know how to counter all those moves, that kind of thing. So it's all basic stuff, nothing fancy with him. But
Before that match, though, he interferes in the match between the other Miracles and New Japan.
Yeah, because they were having a three-man match that they finally let
Ryu.
Finally let Ryu in. It's like, you're on the card.
That's only because all the other good wrestlers are abroad.
Yeah,
it's not exactly his time to shine or anything, but it's because he's fighting Miracle 3 and...
They have like...
He's fighting Miracle 1 and 2 and...
1 and 2 and like fucking Chico Martinez.
Yes, one of the random... I think we've seen him before,
yeah,
but
he's Kevin. He's Kevin's other mate.
Yeah.
So I thought, what they're sending in, that like they're rookies, wasn't it our rookie as well?
Yeah. And then Miracle 3 interferes, so Tiger Mask runs in and helps them.
Yeah, he helps the New Japan guys who have still kind of shown disgust of him, because your man's obviously still, Ryo's still coming on to his promoter, but he kind of like snubbed Tiger Mask essentially. Very obviously snubbed him, so yeah, they're still kind of mad at him, obviously.
Which leads directly into the Tiger Mask's match against Miracle 3, but the rest of the GWM wrestlers stay around because it's going to be a lumberjack match. And so they'll be outside ready to throw Tiger Mask back into the ring if he goes outside.
By which they mean punch him a few times and then throw him back.
Kick his head in and then fucking put him back in.
Yeah.
And so that happens. Fukuhara Mask is kind of... The best bit is when he's basically just pointing his mouth towards the New Japan wrestlers. He's going, who will help Tiger Mask? Who will be his second?
I know there were some strong, burly wrestlers in the building to help him out.
Initially, his manager is going to run up and be his second. Which, I mean, like...
She'd probably do it.
Because we've seen her earlier. She fucking, like, caved a punching bag in with a kick. She's getting pretty good.
But Ryu grabs her arm and says, no, you don't have to, we'll go.
After him getting the shit kicked out of him for a while,
and she gets the shoujoist eyes she's ever had in the series,
because I think it's her finally kind of falling for him. He's actually done something manly in her eyes, as opposed to just be a weird creep who asks her out constantly. And he does ask her out at the end of it as well, anyway.
But they all go to the dinner. Like, okay, are you paying for all of us for you? No.
Oh, dear.
Miracle 3's got all Tiger Mask's moves read, but earlier in the episode, Tiger Mask had been practicing other people's moves.
To see if he could kind of come up with his own killer move from studying other people's ones.
And so he uses, is it King Tiger's?
His axe kick.
Axe kick.
Which he wasn't very good at, but obviously Miracle 3 hasn't seen him do it. So
it's not flashy, it's not as spectacular as that one, but fucking hurt him. So
yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
And he also pays Kevin a visit.
Well, there's a bit with that where he's...
a visit, rather, and...
You won't be Kevin a visit before, and Kevin would say, you're never coming around here. Fucking Tiger Mask kisses him immediately.
And then he gets jealous as well, but...
Yeah, because it's like, oh, your girlfriend's with another guy. It's like, no, she's being a physiotherapist. That's her job. Ah, dear. The reason your man asked him is not to get a girlfriend for his son, but because she gave him physiotherapy and he considers her good at her fucking job. Ah, dear.
Oh, yes.
Classic freaking misunderstandings. And
it is, yes. Yeah, because he almost feels like he's given up now on that being a relationship.
Yeah.
A conversation on the way back.
Mm.
But yeah, now he's back in with New Japan now. They're all buddies again.
Yeah, I think when the commentator says, oh, Tiger Mask has done another betrayal.
Yes.
I think even his old wrestling boss was kind of like, well, dude, I'm just glad you didn't. I was worried you were going to stick with Tiger's Den for a bit.
Yes.
Everyone's kind of surprised at his constant heel turning.
And then next week, more Tigers show up.
There's at least two, yeah.
Yes. And they also mentioned that, yeah, Miracle 3 for losing is probably going to get a Tigers execution.
Mm.
Yeah. I think the way it'll happen is that, okay, we've got all these Tiger masks running around. We're going to have some kind of event where... only one can be at the top Tiger, so Tiger is going to beat all the other Tigers, and then that'll only leave the third for him to take on. Or
yeah, I guess. I guess the third doesn't have the word Tiger in his name, though, even though obviously he's wearing a Tiger mask.
He's Tiger the Great the Third.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
We did confirm that earlier. Okay, on to Attack on Titan, episode 33, is it?
33, The Hunters.
You talked about it last week, yeah?
One of us did.
Dwayne did.
Yes. I didn't want to bore Brian, so I just talked about the sweet wrestling in the last episode.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And
yeah.
We just missed out one of them was based on Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, probably the Armored Titan, I think.
Yeah.
But, this episode sort of picks up where that last one left off with the... I guess the husk of the Colossal Titan collapsing on their wrestling match at the bottom of the wall.
It just falls and it just sort of just nukes. And I guess it kind of explodes as well because it's built up so much steam inside that it just blasts the surrounding area.
That seemed to be what it was doing to keep everyone at bay. And we later learn everyone's badly fucking burned by it shooting out steam.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then they kind of use that to cover their escape. Fucking Armored Titan bites the back of... Titan Eren's neck and they make off with him
and you figure like it's not to kill him, it's because the guy I've forgotten his name, who is the Colossal Titan, he's carrying the girl after having swallowed her earlier.
or Berthold is a Colossal Titan.
He's carrying
and it's kind of more deep into the aftermath of that, but the feeling kind of despondent about one fuck, we fucked up again and get the fun dropping us.
Yeah, and obviously Mikasa is like the most disturbed by this because the one thing that she tries to do is protect that guy, and it's like, where is he? It's like, he's gone. They've been gone like 5 hours.
He's always running off and getting his ass kicked, even though he's not very good at fighting.
Your man's speech of, I've never seen him win a fight, but I've never seen him back away from a fight.
Yeah.
I've never seen him lose one either, kind of thing. The reason they're waiting, obviously, is they have to wait for reinforcements, for someone to bring a lift so they can bring the horses to the opposite side of the wall.
Yeah. And they gotta wait for Commander Urban to come because, you know, she's hearing about this back at HQ, and it's like, well, I fucking better get out there because it sounds like these idiots are messing everything up over there.
Yeah, you do get a lot of the interior guards going, it's like, oh, I thought we were going to get to fight a Titan. You know, being real jerks.
Levi is like, you want to fight some Titans, boys? Well, as soon as I'm up and well again, I'm heading straight back out. You want to come with me? No, Commander Levi, it's okay. we're fine right here.
Putting them kind of in their place, Aaron.
Yeah. It was kind of good, you know. Oh, this guy who he was the drunken like town guard who he's been kind of been there from like since they were kids is like the one who gives him the kind of pep talk.
Yeah, and I even like the kind of flashback to I think it was the scene in it was it the first or second episode where the bullies Aaron's confronting the bullies.
Oh, that wasn't even a thing. It was just like flashing back to when they were kids.
Yeah, I felt like it was the same bullies they dealt with in those earlier episodes. But it doesn't matter anyway, where he's basically like laughing at the kids watching them fight and him getting involved in a fist fight as well for not guarding the place. That kind of thing. It just descends into a bit of a brawly type situation, but where it's like, yeah, I want it to return to the good old days, and for that we need to go get Aaron. And then they all start like angrily eating field rations.
We gotta get a straight backup. They're doing killing some titans.
Yeah.
And then Hanji has surmised that so those guys are all fucked up right now, so they probably want to stay somewhere probably until nightfall.
Yeah, where they can travel again without being, you know, attacked by other titans.
Yeah. And she just smiles. You're probably in this like, giant forest here. There's loads of big trees and kind of hiding around there. And sure enough, they're there. And that's where Aaron wakes up with his fucking arms chopped off.
Yeah, steam coming out of the things. What's the other girl who's a titan?
Ymir.
Ymir is there, and she's missing a hand and a foot, I think.
Yeah,
her arm and leg seems to have mostly grown back.
But that massive bite out of her torso is coming along fine as well.
Yeah. And they have the lads kind of standing over them, mocking them. So it's kind of like basically recovering from like a loss and getting back on the feet again. Losing the will and then gaining the will again. And I think the episode clips along pretty good for them.
Mm. Yeah, it's... I guess, like, you know, were in previous things, like people would kind of fall like into despair, kind of very quickly almost, or at least maybe earlier Burns' careless would all to be done. And now they seem a lot more kind of, I guess, kind of pissed off because we get some all these guys who'd say they're our friends, and now they're coming as fuckers over. And
is it a situation this time? It's personal. I don't.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you know, like it was almost like, you know, about killing the titans and trying to, like, you know, protect from humanity from even destruction, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's always like doing that, but it also like kind of the fear of that. But now it's like they got that. Those weren't real stakes. These are something you can kind of really kind of conceive and grasp onto. But I'm saying,
yeah, it's an enemy with a face, an enemy who you have fucking interacted with. Yeah.
So even like, you know, poor old Connie, who, you know, he'd rather be born, be probably running into the door, if I'm thinking, I'm gonna find out what the fuck is on with that Ryan phone. He used to be my fucking buddy, and now
I need to hear it from his mouth, kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is it's kind of good because obviously from the last time we've seen him, he didn't realize because you hear him, it's like, oh fucking, you got to watch out for Reiner. They're still back there, you know, not realizing that they are the Titans. And yeah, he seems someone's told him off screen that this has happened, so
yeah.
He's also really determined to kick these guys' ass. I think, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, for all the horse they kind of bring in here, like they do. they're great at a lot of things. They're great at like conveying these colossal beasts and these like grotesque like monsters and them fighting each other. Still can't get the horses down.
You got to CG those horses, yeah.
There's one kind of stumbling block in anything here visually and production wise. I'd say it's just those horses. But besides that, it's kind of keeping it up. You know, it's probably good to have this little thing to kind of wind down a bit after all the action, and then presumably it's going to kick off again
or turn into a chase or something. Yeah,
an episode or two's time. I mean, that beast titan is going to come from running back in again. We don't know what the fuck his deal is.
Cause
it sounds like he's operating independently of what the kids who were the plants inside the wall were doing. So I don't know why he's up to. I mean, sure, he was there. He probably would have known that the kids were there because he's when he sent times after them when they're inside a castle and they're open power of that. So presumably he would probably have known that they were there. You know?
There's more groups and more like sides to this than just humanity versus Titans, so that makes it kind of interesting. All right, yeah.
But it's just like different factions within the Titans, or at least within like people
who can turn into Titans.
Turn into Titans, and then either other kinds, either just like camps. I don't know. It's a lot of things right there. A lot of things to speculate upon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's a good program. And it could be, it's really hosting to be now. It's doing like a better job. You don't feel like it before where the episode is kind of wasted of one thing. Oh, they're still doing this thing. Actually, like it always leaves off a decent enough point where it leaves a.
There's plenty of pieces missing, but like each episode tends to seem to be a step forward. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a far cry removed from the infamous first season. And three episodes to put a rock in a wall to block the hole. Now it's just, there's always something worthwhile happening, something meaningful driving it forward, either like plot wise or just like emotion development wise. It's like, yeah, like a world away from the old procedural sense of it. It's great.
All very well and good, Niall, but how are its fart gags?
I haven't seen any fart gags. Yeah.
Well, they say it's steam. It could all have been fart gas from, And that means they dropped a massive fucking fart nuke there that blew away the surrounding countryside.
Because Haybot episode 33, Screwed Away, opens with a fart gag I've never seen before. And I was really impressed with it. So basically, there's somebody rubbing their hand on some metal. It's making a farting noise. And then you pulls out to reveal it's like a magic lamp. And the rubbing noise is making a farting noise, but when the genies come out, they're fart genies. Who are a version of Nedjeri's brother and Peket, Haybot's brother, but as genies who are farts. And then they grant the awesome fine screws wish, because I think the other guys make some wishes as well, which they say no to. And they grant the wish that today's episode will be a musical.
Right, musical?
It's not much of a musical, no. What it actually is it's definitely a parody of, in part, the Toho film The Space Amoeba. I feel like it's a parody of possibly some other Toho films, because there's things which I either have heard about or I've seen before, and I can't for the life of me place them. So if you know where any of these things might come from now. So, in this story, basically, the awesome fine screw and Vokami end up washed ashore amnesiacs on this deserted island.
Right.
But they find a tribe of some other unused character designs for Haybot who are ruled over by two female twins are their leaders. Who are a female version of Haybot and a female version of Nedjeri.
Okay, well, that's not really twins, but okay.
They are twins, apparently. they don't look alike, but they say they're twins. So that's why the twins thing must be a reference. Then they've got this prophecy which shows the awesome fine screw is going to come here and is their god. They'll be accompanied with an angel, which is Vokami. Which, again, I feel like that prophecy thing is also taken from a specific film. And then at some point, Vokami gets possessed by the ghost of a dead princess, which is the third thing, which I was like, I'm sure I've heard that being part of some sort of Japanese science fiction film. Possibly even seen it, and I can't place it at all.
Well, possessed by the ghost of a dead princess sounds like, wasn't that in... I think that was one of the Godzilla films.
Yeah, I know.
I think there was one that had King Caesar.
I think you might be onto something there. Yes, I was pretty sure it was to be Toho, because later on there's something which people have definitely spotted as being Space Amoeba, because the three monsters from the Space Amoeba turn up in Haybot form and have a fight. I can't even remember how this thing ends, but it's all very inconsequential. And it's all started. They all basically, the awesome fine screw runs away from home when the other characters read an article in a gossip magazine, pretty much like the ones that the guy's reading in Laughing Salesman. When apparently, awesome fine screw is actually just a normal screw. There's nothing awesome or fine about it at all.
So it just like holds a thing you screw it into.
Yes. And so it runs away from home, ashamed that its secret's been revealed. Then they get back home and they wonder where the people. And then for some reason, the people who are on the island are now living in the cupboard of Nedjeri's brother and Peckett's house. Which, again, I think might be a reference to something as well. This was the point at which the references got too old for me. Which begs the question, who is this show for, as always? It's now referencing 1970 Toho monster films. But yeah, I think you might be right. It's a Godzilla. It's definitely, yeah, it was just the annoying thing of something you recognise as a reference, but you don't recognise where it's from, and it itches away at your brain, because you're like, I'm sure I know where that's from.
Mm.
And it, yeah, it was driving me crazy.
You got to be careful about that, though, with often, because often that could be like... you have a memory of a thing from long, long ago, but over time, maybe it has become distorted, and you remember a different way. And then when you see something else and it reminds you of that, it could be that memory of something that never actually happened that's bugging you. Even though, yeah, it's an odd one, but it's happened to me before. Where like, and I've seen it happen to others though. And I think there was recently, as a joke, some gay neighbor was put out like a thing about, wouldn't it be great if we do a Kickstarter to remake like, it was like a fake name, like, you know.
Oh, it was like a fake Final Fantasy.
Like Magic Genesis, and then like, you know, the classic, like, you know, like SNES RPG, and then Q getting hundreds of like responses saying, oh yeah, Magic Genesis, remember that fucking game on the SNES? Yeah. And no, you didn't. That game never existed.
Yeah, it's like that. What was that thing those British animators made? That thing which was thing. Yeah.
Oh!
The fucking Samurai Rabbit thing.
Yeah. It was like it looked like a Ninja Turtles ripoff, but yeah, it was meant to. They added the old VHS on top of it and everything.
Now, there is somebody on Nico Video who is making videos. Where they're annotating Haybot. So hopefully they'll eventually get to this episode and that will fully explain everything.
Yeah, this
isn't the same guy who was doing thing, is it? French Toast?
I don't know. I probably should look at that blog, see if somebody is doing annotating Haybot. Because there's, I've been looking, basically I went to Twitter and typed in Japanese for Haybot and then Japanese for Paro, because that's quite often how people abbreviate parody.
Ah.
I've discovered, and that told me the Space Amoeba thing. And then some other stuff I'd missed, like, early on. Like, there's scenes out of G Gundam, specifically parodied. Scenes out of Revolutionary Girl Utena. Again, yeah, it's... I suspect the people it's for are the people who are making it.
Yeah, that seems likely. It's like, hey, remember those old Godzilla films? Let's do that.
Let's see what we can get away with this week.
Yeah. Actually, you would be curious to know that ANN's weekly animated like discussion thing. They've discovered what Haybot is now and are trying to make sense of it. They're not, but
no.
At least one of them seems to enjoy it, so that's okay. That's a plus in the old Haybot column there.
Yeah. Dwayne said he was going to watch it, but then I said there was a fart gag in it. He's refused.
Yeah, I was saying, like, for Brian's sake, will I watch Haybot so we can talk about Haybot? And then you said farts, and I was like, no!
What have you got against fart gags, Dwayne?
I'm an old man, I suppose. That's my problem.
Dragon Ball Super, episode 91. Which universe will survive? The strongest warriors are gathering. This was pretty much what I wanted from this episode.
Yeah, see, I heard a lot of complaints about this one. I think it was more so about the end. But, like, I thought it was going to be more fucking around on Earth. But it's like, no. What's everybody else doing?
Yes.
That's much more important. And apparently the Zeno-samas are just, they're watching everything unfold on telly, for lack of better terms.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go through. I think there's two universes we've not visited yet, but it looks like we'll get them next week.
Yeah. They point out that Universe 7 and Universe, oh crap, what's the universe where they've gathered together a bunch of muscly dudes? They're going to get with full teams.
Universe 10.
10, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so 10 are they're making GodTube videos when they should be trying.
Oh yeah, this is going to get so many views, says the Kai, and I'm just like, dude, if they win a fighting tournament to determine your existence, what are you doing?
I hope the video still exists after your universe is erased.
We do see that one of their people's got like wings apparently rather than arms.
Yeah, he's got like little crow feathers or something. It's not clear.
Yeah, so the little Cuss the angel is doing a dance with the 10 fighters.
It's totally gonna go viral, you guys.
Universe 9 can't find 7 more people to be on the team.
Yeah, and the God of Destruction is going around the planet. It's like, okay, did you find anyone here? It's like, nah, it kind of got out that the universe is going to destroy and everyone went fucking crazy. Yeah. It's like, fuck it, erase the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some bad guys who are trying to escape this universe into one which wasn't going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, next fight, we'll try again. Start over.
That's not a very efficient way, you guys.
No, it's a wash. Forget about it. That guy's spreading around.
In 7, Hit goes and finds Frost and...
in that cool fucking Blade Runner planet that yes. is apparently... Is every planet that in Hit's universe?
I think, yeah, it may well be,
Hit's planet, anyway.
And, yeah, Frost has been on the run. He's, like, down and out. I really liked this version of a Freezer.
What, like a loser Freezer?
Yeah, but at the same time, he's going to go down fighting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he might see it as his redemption, because technically if he wins, or he helps win, he's saved the universe.
Yes.
So he's still a good guy?
Well...
Yeah, it's a kind of redemption, I guess.
Might pardon him from his past crimes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably what he's hoping for.
Yeah, and Hit's like, I'm not going to kill you. If I was going to kill you, you'd be dead.
And he was actually impressed. He's like, whoa, I had to try for like a fucking minute there.
Your life like, in the ruin is hard from your spirit.
And he's asking him to discard his poison needles, which he apparently can just pluck out.
Yes, and the one from your heel.
Oh, you spotted that one, huh?
And that one. Oh.
And Kabak gets Cauliflower to go Super Saiyan this week, is it? Or is that
that's the next, preview. We haven't actually gotten back to them, yeah.
Okay. I'm mixing things up. Universe 11, Toppo and the Cat Rabbit guy.
They're waiting for the captain. Colonel, sorry.
Yes.
Who's rescuing a cat.
Yes.
But not from a tree, from like a fucking tube of electrical wires, which he like can't make the cat nervous because then it'll jump and get electrocuted.
It's what use is saving the universe if we can't save the lives in front of us?
Including this cat. And his two little kids watching him as well, so he's not looking like, sorry kids, tough shit.
These guys are great. I love the fact they're so much more noble and pure-hearted than the people. They're
wearing cool suits. They're hanging out at the bar. They're just like going like, yeah, we're fucking really... Like, our main characters are mostly assholes. I mean, like, it's mostly Goku, like, increasing the asshole level for everyone else.
But a lot of them were villains to begin with.
That's true as well. Yeah, yeah.
As Vegeta up on God's floating island. They're going, okay, go into the time lengthening room, but don't put the door again. He's like, whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Popo's eyes where he says, like, I'll fucking ban you if you fucking destroy the hyperbolic time chamber, you son of a bitch.
Whatever, Popo, I'm going in. He's going to put the door again, isn't he? Yeah, I know.
Whis and Goku train, and also...
Yeah, he actually manages to land a hit on Whis, but by biting him, it underhanded.
And Yamcha's like, Pu'ah, they are going to come and ask me to be part of the team, aren't they?
Yeah, of course they are, Yamcha. Yeah, sure, I'm your best friend. I'm not going to let you down. And Master Roshi shows up at the window.
Yes.
Why he couldn't go downstairs, I don't fucking know.
And he's like, yeah, finally. And they go, no, we're here for Pu'ah. We need...
Brilliant. And I fucking love that. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Fucking people remember the Pu'ah as a shapeshifter. Yeah. Or at least Master Roshi
does. it's a shapeshifter because Master Roshi is, okay, time has come. You know, there's some serious fucking tournament shit going on here. I got to overcome my one weakness. It's hot ladies and my need thereof.
He's like, I need Pu'ah to turn into a hot lady. And he's like, why didn't you get just fucking the pig to turn into a hot lady? He's like, he's done it before. And he's like, no, I'm traumatized now.
No, we can't do that again. And then there's just like, you know, what's
really
going to do? Instead of shed on the roof, we hear like this god-awful sounds coming out of there. And then after I do it, it's like, do you want to get out of here, man? I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah, I took the exact same thing. Let's just go.
Then we see Universe 2.
Yes, that was contrasted to Universe 10 or...
Where they're holding, holding an audition to join the team. And these two women tell this pretty woman that
It's not an idol thing. Yes. This is a fighting tournament we're signing up for.
And she's like, yeah, I know. I'm Brienne de Chateau.
And I could kick all of your asses.
And she
transformation!
Yes.
Brilliant fucking transformation, by the way.
And she's the Teletubby-looking woman from the opening credits. When she
fighting Vegeta, yeah.
When she becomes a magical girl.
No, magic
but she still
allowed.
Does all the cutesy things.
Yes.
Which is great.
And they allow her to, because they can just kind of do whatever the hell they want and not have to write, like, wand or bejeweled accessory, you know?
Well, maybe if she goes in her transformed form, that's as much as she's going to bring, you know?
But yeah, I can see her turning back, and that's how Roshi. I can see her beating Roshi up by alternating forms.
Yeah.
Oh,
dear. Because everyone thinks that Roshi can't overcome his greatest weakness, inverted commas.
Yeah.
He's just, I need to be, stop being a pervy old man. And everyone's like, I don't see that happening.
I think that was everything, wasn't it?
Hopping back and forth between the universes.
We
some strategy meetings with Gohan and the lads just hanging out at Bulma's.
But oh,
and
no.
Bulma gets a phone call.
Bulma's gone into one of his 2 month sleeps.
Oh no, we gotta go wake him up. Yeah, it's gonna be like this. I'd say another episode, maybe even two episodes of
them
kind of doing this. No, because we'll be seeing what other universes are doing. Meanwhile, some stuff is happening on Earth to.
Yeah,
stall the plot.
I would have been happy if every the episodes leading up to kept switching back and forth between the universes. But
as we discussed last week, the other episode titles are out, and I think it's 2 episodes time is the one which people get worried about.
Yeah.
Who the replacement might be?
I'm these are fun and all, but I am about ready to get this thing on the show on the road.
I'm fine, just carry on.
It depends, the level of fucking around. This episode was an excellent level of fucking around for me. Because I guess we get a lot of different points of view.
Yeah, I'd be happy with, a profile of every single one of these 80 people going into the
I want to see what those muscly dudes look like underneath the cloaks.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun reveal, but maybe they're just going to do all of them at the same time.
Yeah, so we've got the... who's left? It's the... Universe 3 and Universe 4 we've not seen.
Yeah.
So 4's the one with the robot god of destruction and the nerd Kai, who apparently believes in the power of intelligence, which is the opposite of...
muscles.
Yeah. because that is their opposite. And the other one we've got is Universe 4 with the mouse god of destruction and the tall orange Kai. So
We haven't seen the Cleopatra.
No, that's Universe 2. That's the one.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to line up all the dudes, and I keep forgetting which is paired to what, you know?
Yeah. So the mouse one will be paired with... is paired with Universe 9.
Mm.
So maybe they're super good as opposed to super useless.
Yeah, I guess. I've kind of I was looking at some of that up to the director of this one was, because there's a lot of interesting sort of match cut shots in this. It's a shot of usually what's his name, the head angel, the Wiz's dad, and his globe thing, and then that globe thing will become a shot of
the
ear or something like that, or it would be turned into someone's the spherical buckle on someone's belt. And I was doing it all kind of across the day. I thought, is this a new director? It's kind of the same director, Kazuo Kamisawa. He's done pretty much nothing but this, some Toriko.
Probably
some
the storyboard artist that week rather than anybody else.
Yeah, maybe.
Because
they'd be the one picking the shots to put in. So.
Yeah, and I couldn't quite get them up. So. Mm.
Okay, on to the final thing. Rage of Bahamut, episode 7, talking of things which forced me to people to look things up. What was this episode called?
The Day of Victory.
Day of Victory.
That's it, yes. Because next week is the Day of Defeat. In which Zazzle's plan unrazzles.
That's... I did like the fact that your man announced it to the king. It's like, so what? We'll just kick all their asses. I don't care. I don't care if there's an assassination attempt.
For exactly the reasons we discussed last week, Dwayne.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Azazel, Azazel, Azazel.
Can he do anything right?
Similarly, yeah. Not. He just flies off the handle. That's all he does.
His plan pretty much is like, I'm a man, this woman will do what I tell her.
Yeah, and it's like, why didn't you, like, his thing of like, why didn't you fucking come to the place? I said, it's like, I was watching the parade. It's like, what did you think I was literally doing at the time? And it's like, yeah, she's not fucking obliged to or anything. So
yeah, that was the
like,
point.
It's not like, I need you to do this. It's very important for the help of my people. It's like, no, just like, fucking do it.
Yeah, I think that's the key scene, is him trying to convince her to do it and then trying to force her to turn into a dragon and it not working.
I fucking loved how awkward he was, because she was like, dude, why are you hugging me? And he's like, I'll hug her again. And he's really like, I'm a cool guy. I don't want to be doing all this. He's like, ugh.
Yeah, because that was the point where I've not looked who's writing this, and I bet this is a woman who is writing this show, because I can't imagine a man writing those sort of scenes. Because it feels like it's written from the perspective of someone who's had to put up with those sort of men before.
Right. Okay.
And it is, yes. It's written by a 65-year-old woman who has written loads and loads of TV and plays and films, and this is her very first animation project, which she's doing as a challenge to herself.
Oh, good job.
Oh, and I was like, which a point I was like, oh yes, often when an anime is good, has a good script, you go and look it up and you turn out they've never written any anime before. Because if they're any good, they don't have to.
Yeah, okay. Oh, dear. I liked a lot of the stuff in this. I liked your man Bacchus trying to convince the other goddess that it's like, oh, that's not totally not the kid you're looking for. That's just some random demon kid. Hey, demon kid, get back to work. You know, he's. I was wondering that with the last episode. Was he getting rid of Nina so he could sell off the legendary child? But it's more so he seems to be like, I really don't want to actually go back to heaven. I think this is a bad idea.
Well, I think he doesn't trust heaven with this child, yeah. I think, is more of the thing.
That they'll use it as a weapon or something. Yes. He's got a bad feeling.
And also he's like, your face looks familiar. So he's almost there on thinking, hang on, you look like Jean.
Mm.
Something's up here, bigger than what it appears to be.
He's trying to stay out of it, but he's not doing a very good job. Yeah.
I do like the fact that there's another scene where Sophie L is right next to the person they're looking for.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else happens in the episode. They're selling, what's it, zombie pancakes? Zombie omelets.
Yeah.
And it's like, don't let the name gross you out. It's just a 200-year-old recipe. And you have the zombie one reminiscing about the time when, you know, she dreamt of bigger things and meeting a guy, and she goes off on a stare like
before dying and becoming like the monster dancer, killed off the ambition I had in life.
There's
lots of good stuff this episode with Hamsa's wings looking like a hand. I thought the duck had some really good body language.
He expresses himself very well for a duck. Yes.
He's going like, yes. First there was the Emerson contest, and then there was the parade last night. Who knows what today might hold?
Yeah,
not that kind of business.
Zombie egging him on, egging her on. It's like, oh, they say if it happens twice, it'll happen three times. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we, as a viewer, we already know that Zazzle's plan has gone south, because it opens with his plan having gone south,
and then it cuts to 5 hours earlier. Yeah. So I think that was a kind of a good way to do it, so it's not not that it's not a shock or anything, but that you know where the plot is going.
Yeah.
Because obviously a lot of shit goes down on this, and a lot of... You see people get killed, like specific demons and stuff, but you didn't see which until the end of the episode.
Yeah.
A corpse pinned to the wall, you know, rapidly decomposing, and thought, oh, that's that big guy that he...
Yeah, I mean, like, there was enough signs there for you to figure it out, but it's not, like, him before his corpse decomposed kind of thing, yeah.
Mm.
I do like the use of the magic arrows and stuff. I assume that's a general Rage of Bahamut thing. They have, like, a portal open in front of their crossbows and stuff.
I'm sure it showed up before, but this was the first, like, I've really explicitly noticed it.
Yeah.
It's cool, though.
Really nice effects. Really nice... It doesn't explain how the magic works, but you can kind of like figure it out from how it's happening. Like when they get hit by a bolt, and then all of a sudden they have an arrow in them, that kind of thing.
Anything else to add?
We know he does like the usual there'll be the episode and then like the ending credits and then might have a bit
after for the preview.
They almost like put the episode like really short, get to the credits and then like an extra long post credits bit this time.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking they do that so they can end on a cliffhanger. I was like, oh my god, I gotta see what happens next. But it's like, yeah, we're gonna show you what happens next. Just watch the fucking credits.
Yeah, because after the credits is where we see how they ended up in the state they are, right? At the start.
Exactly.
Mm. Like, whatever about, like, I had like, the big guy getting pinned with arrows and all. But, like, they're already just getting smushed by a giant fist.
And yeah, especially after Azazel is like, I was like, I'll fucking run this way and, like, draw their fire and you guys fucking leg it. And the thing of them, like, shoot all the guys escaping. It's like, well, fuck.
They got a giant magical enchanted suits of armor that can just stomp around and smash us to pieces.
Yeah.
I feel like ushering up through a crossbow is not going to do much.
It's the only thing that's unfortunate, like, in terms of, like, you already knowing how this turns out, is the demons are kind of there. It's like, well, where's the fucking dragon? It's like, I didn't see the fucking dragon. Will we fuck off home?
Because at that point, Azazel's trying to get them to stop the attack.
And they were planning on stopping it at their own thing, but then the king is like, hey, those guys over there, they're probably demons because they're wearing cloaks and they haven't ran the fuck away. And they're like, do we fight? And it's like, it's just a random shot fire that kind of starts the whole thing.
Yeah, but I think the way the episodes are titled then makes you wonder next week, well, if this was the day of victory for...
Well, I think it was also referencing the fact that this is the day they invaded the demon city. So it's kind of like it'll be the perfect thing if we have the rag demon's head. Ha ha ha.
It's like exactly whose defeat is the day of defeat next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Us, the viewers? I hope not.
No, I doubt that. Yeah, I've found the... Shizuka Oishi is the screenwriter on this. So yeah, I think that's probably... I think she's probably a big part of why this feels very different from the first series.
Hmm.
But obviously, having the other creative team being very much the same people, it also feels similar to the first series as well. But which is quite a good way of doing things.
Yeah, I guess like they already are on top, and then just have another thing to throw into the mix to bring something fresh into it. I'd say bring something fresh into it when we have like a woman who's been in the business for 65 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, like fresh to an anime in this case.
Yes, exactly. Yes, she's
I mean, it's kind of, I guess, like, freeing where you, like, they would probably just get, like, a regular kind of anime TV series writer now and then. Oh, they might adhere too much to all the usual stuff.
Because, I mean, like, Nina has been a constant fucking delight.
Yes.
We don't get as much of her in this episode, unfortunately, but we got, like, a really good portion of the last episode, so I'm not really complaining.
Yep. That's it for this week. Oh, where's my voice going? But before we go, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Well, you know, life gets in the way. It gets in the way on all that now. So I think the last time I was on, I said it will be Ultra Frost in the future. It will be in the future. I'm not sure when, but it'll be happening
soon.
End of this week, anyway. it just happens. You try and schedule things, and again with people, and then again we have things on, so you need to resort to backup measures or defer things. So I don't want to be repeating myself every week, but for sure, definitely, with me and Dwayne, will be Ultra Force. Ultra Force.
Well, yes, we avoided that problem by having no guests on the last two episodes of Dynamite in the Brain. So last week we had Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva, and then coming up we have an episode called Anime Twin Peaks, the most opportunistic, possibly deceptive episode title.
So it's not actually that, right?
Well, no, it's not about Haybot, no. If you want to find out what it's actually about, you'll have to check it out. Also, watch the new Twin Peaks. It's really, really good.
Good.
But I don't want to turn this into let's go Twin Peaks.
Oh, there's going to be...
There's been so many...
There's going to be a podcast about that.
I'm sure there's already a Twin Peaks podcast, and I'm sure they're sure. Seventh Heaven.
They're all over this. I can see the AV Club doing this, who had a podcast about the podcast.
Or maybe after episode 3, they're really, really... They've given up on Twin Peaks entirely.
I've heard it's a difficult thing to kind of sum up.
Well, it lures you into a false sense of security with the first two episodes.
Mm.
And then the first 15 minutes or so of the third episode is like, how much do you really like Twin Peaks? How much pure Lynchian oddness are you going to endure to show how much you like Twin Peaks?
Like, I like Eraserhead a lot, so
episode 3 of this new Twin Peaks.
Okay, excellent.
Because, yeah, it's this one where you go, oh, yes, he did some animation before early in his career.
good.
So we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.